Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Jill Robbins, Bruce Alpert, Dorothy Gundy, Alice Bryant, and Christopher Jones Cruz. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Marcia James will bring us this week's Personal Technology Report. But first, here is Jill Robbins.
China does not have separation of powers, but that did not stop Chinese Supreme People's Court Judge He Fan from calling President Donald Trump an enemy of the rule of law. He said Trump should not have criticized federal judge James Robart for temporarily blocking his executive order on immigration. Under the U.S. system of separation of powers, a president should accept his loss silently and not attack the judge who ruled against him, He wrote. What is the separation of powers? The U.S. Constitution set up three separate but equal branches of government. The legislative branch, or Congress, makes the law. The executive, led by the president, executes the law. And the judicial, or courts, interprets the law. The idea is to divide power so each branch of government has its own powers and limits. But fights over how to apply these divisions of power have been frequent, up to and including Trump's travel ban.
On January 27th, President Trump signed an executive order to temporarily stop travel to the U.S. from seven Muslim-majority nations. After Judge Robart blocked his order, Trump went on Twitter to call Judge Robart a so-called judge. He said Robart's decision was ridiculous and opened the United States to possible terror attacks. On Tuesday, the Federal Appeals Court in San Francisco heard arguments on whether Judge Robart's order against Trump's travel ban should be overturned. The court is expected to rule this week on the appeal from the Trump administration. Josh Chaffetz is a professor of law at Cornell University in New York. He said Trump's criticism was unusual, coming so early in his presidency. By calling Robart a so-called judge, Trump seems to be questioning his standing as a judge, Chaffetz said.
Randy Barnett, a law professor of Georgetown University, sees Trump's criticism of the judge as mildly disrespectful. But he said it does not compare to President Barack Obama's criticism of the Supreme Court during a 2010 speech before Congress. Obama was criticizing a Supreme Court decision that permitted unlimited donations to political campaigns. Barnett said that the judges were in the audience as Obama criticized them. The Democrats in the audience stood and cheered.
There have been many battles among the three branches of government over separation of powers in U.S. history. The Supreme Court's first decision about separation of powers came in 1803. The court ruled it had the power to reject a law passed by Congress if it found the law unconstitutional. In 1832, President Andrew Jackson did not like a decision by the Supreme Court led by Justice John Marshall. The decision ended states' law on land that belonged to Native American tribes. Jackson reportedly said, "John Marshall has made his decision. Now let him enforce it."
Nearly 100 years later, President Franklin Roosevelt proposed to increase the number of justices on the Supreme Court from 9 to 15. His critics accused him of trying to pack the court. They said he wanted to appoint justices supportive of his policies to get around opposition from the sitting justices. The proposal failed to pass in Congress. Among the court's other important rulings was a 1974 decision ordering President Richard Nixon to release tape recordings in what was known as the Watergate scandal. The scandal led to Nixon's resignation. Some legal experts have questioned whether Trump will comply with court orders. Barnett, the Georgetown professor, said it is a good sign that the Trump administration stopped the travel ban after Judge Robart's ruling. But Trump has argued that he feels strongly his immigration ban is needed. This is what he tweeted Wednesday morning. "If the U.S. does not win this case, as it so obviously should, we can never have the security and safety to which we are entitled. Politics." I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Bruce Alpert.
Almost anyone with a good idea and the ability to write directions for a computer software program can make products that were not possible before the internet. But it is not enough to just have an idea. A team of people with different skills is necessary to turn that idea into reality. Teams like this are often formed at an event called a hackathon. Sabine Ali is the founder and leader of a California company called Angel Hack. It organizes hackathons around the world. At a hackathon, she says, people with creative ideas can join with others to develop and write computer programs.
A hacker is anyone that can take limited resources or be in any type of constraint, time constraint, resource constraint, knowledge constraint, and create something from nothing or something from very little.
As a child, Sabine Ali learned to live on very little money. Her parents were immigrants from Pakistan. Her father died when she was very young.
You know, I lived in a house with a single parent, three kids, and we had to figure out how to do a lot of things on our own.
Ali said she used her childhood experiences to create her company.
Somebody who works in a larger organization, 9 to 5, building the same app day after day, can come and build that thing that's been keeping them up at night. Or somebody like me who's an entrepreneur who has this amazing idea, I know how to make money from it, I know all the customers and the clients, but I don't have the tech resources to be able to put it together. I needed this type of, you know, outlet and support and forum.
Her business has organized hackathons in more than 90 cities throughout the world. Hackers form teams and compete to win awards for the best idea and best product. Angel Hack works with a winner from each event for 12 weeks, helping them form companies and persuade people to invest money in their idea. The top teams are brought to Silicon Valley, near San Francisco, where they present their idea to hundreds of possible investors. Some teams helped by AngelHack have had great success. Investors gave one team $10 million. Two others were bought by Google, the technology company. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Rex My Mary was disabled with a serious illness when she was 6 months old. She is confined to a wheelchair and lives with her family on an island in the Mekong River in Cambodia. As a young child, Rex My traveled only to see the doctor near her house. And after age 10, Rex My no longer went anywhere. Her mother, Kam V, age 47, told VOA that at a certain point, we could no longer take Mary anywhere by motorbike. The family tried using a regular tuk-tuk, a small three-wheeled vehicle common in Cambodia, but that was difficult as well. The driver struggled to get Rex My and her wheelchair onto the vehicle.
The wheelchair is very heavy. I am alone, and I can't do it, Kam said. We stopped taking her out, so she stayed at home on the bed all the time. But recently, Rex My went with her family for the first time to a shopping mall in Phnom Penh. The trip was made possible by a new service for the physically disabled. The service is called Mobilituk. Mobilituks are tuk-tuks that have been modified to make transporting the disabled easier. They have a steel ramp that pulls down to allow a wheelchair to roll up. Agile Design Group, known as ADG, a Phnom Penh-based organization, created Mobilituk. The group specializes in projects that help disabled people have better access to everyday activities. ADG recognizes that disabled people everywhere face transportation problems. But in developing nations, such as Cambodia, those problems are usually even harder.
Mobilituk has other fans, too. Disability activist and writer John Morris is confined to a wheelchair. Morris travels the world and then writes about his experiences as a traveler with a disability. He said affordable wheelchair transport in developing countries means the disabled are no longer trapped at home. Cambodia's Ministry of Social Affairs estimates that at least 50,000 people in Cambodia are physically disabled. Another organization, the Asian Development Bank, estimates that as much as 15% of the Cambodian population lives with physical and mental disabilities. To reach them, ADG is working with the International Committee of the Red Cross. The two groups plan to increase the number of Mobilituks in the northern areas of Cambodia. Keo Johnston, an ADG engineer, told VOA Khmer that the Mobilituk program has been a rewarding project in many ways. He said that seeing the happiness of someone who can now visit the city and do exciting things makes him want to help more.
Mobilitux also expand opportunities for tuk-tuk drivers. A month after getting his tuk-tuk converted into a Mobilitux, driver Cao Sa Root had two disabled riders, including Rex Mai. Cao said his disabled riders liked the Mobilitux better than a car or other vehicle. And Cao is happy that he can help. I think I can help society by helping disabled persons, as they find it quite difficult to travel anywhere, he said. He said that other tuk-tuk drivers are now interested in having the steel ramp in their vehicles. The Mobilitux brings increased risk along with increased freedom for riders. The first time she rode in one, Rex Mai got hurt. Her family believes Rex Mai was injured because before the ride, she had not moved her body for almost 20 years. After she recovered, Rex Mai tried again. She has since traveled to the Royal Palace, Independence Monument, shopping malls, and the hospital.
With her mother and an aunt along for the ride, these trips are no longer difficult. She feels very happy now, her mother, Com V, said. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
Healthcare workers in Kenya have been on strike for nearly 2 months. The strike has affected all 47 counties across the country. Only private hospitals are operating. The strike has paralyzed Kenya's public health system. Tens of thousands of people are unable to see their doctor or receive reasonably priced medical care. Doctors are refusing to work until the government increases their wages, as it agreed to do in 2013. The doctors also say the government must keep its promise to provide better equipment. The doctors want the pay raise promised to them in a June 2013 agreement. Under the plan, the monthly pay of the lowest-paid doctor would rise to $3,420. The highest-paid doctors would receive about $9,400 a month. Now, the highest-paid doctors receive $5,000 a month. The lowest paid get $400. One Kenyan man is using his artwork to show the effect of the strike on the average person. Artist Joseph Mbatia is better known as Bertiers. Bertiers has started working on a new piece that represents his thinking about the strike. This is not the first time he has worked on such art. In 2014, the Ebola virus hit West Africa. The disease killed many people. Medical experts feared the virus might move east. So Bertiers imagined Kenyan doctors going on strike at a time when Ebola was infecting people across the country. The resulting artwork is just one of many pieces he has created at his art studio near Nairobi. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
This is what's trending today. The Twitter hashtag #LetLizSpeak was trending on social media Wednesday, and over 6 million people saw a video from Elizabeth Warren, a member of the United States Senate. Warren is a member of the Democratic Party from Massachusetts. On Tuesday, the Senate was considering whether to approve Senator Jeff Sessions as the next U.S. Attorney General. During the Senate debate on Sessions' nomination, Warren read a letter written by Coretta Scott King. King was the wife of civil rights leader Martin Luther King. She wrote the letter in 1986 when Sessions was being considered for a federal court judgeship. Tuesday night, Warren was reading Coretta Scott King's letter aloud on the Senate floor. King wrote that Sessions used his power in Alabama to chill the free exercise of the vote by black citizens. That is when Senator Steve Daines intervened. He warned Warren that Senate rules bar one senator from speaking badly about another. Warren was permitted to continue reading the letter, but she was stopped again, this time by Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. Warren was told she could not continue reading the letter. Warren asked to continue speaking, but her appeal was rejected. Warren left the Senate floor, went to a nearby room, and continued reading the letter. She posted the video to her Facebook page. By Wednesday afternoon, the 15-minute video received over 400,000 comments. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
One of the most infuriating things about the internet is when a website closes down. You might follow a favorite writer's blog, save links to helpful articles, and share interesting posts on social media. But then one day, you return to the website to discover that it is gone. The site does not exist anymore. All of the useful stories and information are now missing. It is like they never existed. The good news is that you may be able to find those sites again, even after they are offline. You can find help from a website called the Wayback Machine. The Wayback Machine site shows a kind of history of the internet. It shows websites that are no longer online and older versions of current sites. The Wayback Machine provides archived records of publicly available websites. Not all websites or versions of sites are available, but many are. To see the archived images, go to the Wayback Machine website and enter the web address of the site you want to see. You must enter the exact web address, not just
the site's name. For example, if you want to see an earlier version of the Learning English website, you would enter learningenglish.voanews.com, not the words Voice of America Learning English. Click the Browse History button. On the results page, you will see how many times the website has been archived and information showing when the site was saved. You can click on a year to see the exact date the site was saved. A blue dot on a date shows the page was saved on that day. Click on a date with a blue dot to see what the website looked like on that date. You can only search for the home page of a website, but once you go to the archive, you may be able to find the story you are looking for on the site. If you want to save an older version of a website, you can do that at the bottom of the Wayback Machine website's home page. Enter the web address of the page you want saved and hit Enter. The Wayback Machine recently launched a beta or test version that lets you search for older websites by keywords. Unlike the original version, the beta version lets you enter search terms to try to find websites you cannot remember. It can also help users when they do not know the exact web address. To use the beta version, go to Beta Wayback Machine. Enter the search term and hit Enter. You will see a list of results that match your term. For example, in the beta version, you can enter GeoCities and see a list of GeoCities websites in different countries. The internet has a history, perhaps not a long history, but a rich one. The Wayback Machine was based on a computer software program developed in 1996 to document websites saving the history of the internet. The Wayback Machine website was launched in 2001 using a version of that software. Since that time, the Wayback Machine has expanded quickly, as has much of the internet. The site was named after the Wayback Machine, a time machine used by a boy and his dog on the Rocky and Bullwinkle Show, a 1960s television series. You can use the Wayback Machine to find closed websites such as GeoCities, which is now only available in Japan. If you are thinking of buying a domain name, see how it was used before in its earlier life on the internet. If the site was used mainly for spam or unwanted advertising, you may not want to use that web address for your site. You can also see how a website looked in the past and follow its design over the years. I'm Marcia James.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.